Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive with us.
Always exciting to be here.
Today we're going deep into the world of ADHD.
Yeah, ADHD.
And we'll be using two books by Lee Hopkins as our guides.
Okay.
Embracing Neurodiversity and Understanding ADHD.
That sounds fascinating.
These books give us a look into how the ADHD brain works.
Okay.
We're talking everything from everyday experiences to those strengths that often go unnoticed.
I think one of the most interesting things is how autism and ADHD were treated separately for so long.
Right.
But what we're learning about ADHD is that it's not just a simple combination.
Yeah.
There's actually recent research.
Okay.
It's from Nature Neuroscience.
Interesting.
It's showing there are distinct neurological patterns in people with ADHD.
Mm.
It really makes us rethink how we used to view these neurotypes.
Okay, so before we get too far into the ADHD world,
sure.
Can we do a quick recap of autism and ADHD individually?
Absolutely.
Just so we're all on the same page?
Yeah, so with autism, it's almost like having a different operating system for processing the world.
Mm, like a different OS.
You know, people with autism might zero in on details,
mm-hmm.
notice patterns that others don't see, or have these deep passions.
Yeah.
For very specific interests.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay, and ADHD.
ADHD.
That's that high energy brain, right?
It's like a brain that's always online.
Yeah, always plugged in.
With like a million tabs open.
Uh-huh. I like that analogy.
It can be tough with focus, organization.
Right.
Maybe a little impulsivity here and there.
Sure.
But there's also a lot of creative energy that comes with it.
Okay, so now we've got the basics.
Right.
Let's talk about this neurodiversity paradigm.
Okay.
This seems like a pretty big shift in how we think about things.
It is a big shift.
Instead of viewing these differences as problems to fix, it's understanding them as just another way of being human.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all when it comes to brains.
Hmm.
Like, think about biodiversity in an ecosystem. Yeah. You know, each organism brings something unique.
Right.
And that's what makes the whole system richer.
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it.
Thanks.
So back to ADHD.
Okay.
Hopkins describes the ADHD brain as this intense multisensory experience, right?
Yes, he does.
It's like having all your senses dialed up to 11 all the time.
He describes it so well in his books.
Yeah.
Just imagine everyday sensations, but like super intense.
Okay.
And nuanced.
Wow.
For example.
Okay.
He talks about those clothing tags.
Oh, yeah. Those are the worst.
And he says feels like these constant postcards from people you never wanted to hear from.
Ugh. I know exactly what you mean.
It's a very specific kind of torture.
And I bet things like office fluorescent lights feel like a never-ending interrogation.
He uses a similar analogy, actually.
Really?
He compares it to a spotlight operator with questionable judgment, always shining the light in the wrong places.
I am really starting to see how all of this comes together. It sounds intense, but also kind of amazing.
It is both.
But with all those heightened senses, it can't be easy to navigate the world all the time.
Right.
What are some of the things that people with ADHD might struggle with?
Well, social interactions can be tricky.
Okay.
It's like you're trying to understand social cues.
Yeah.
While you're also processing all this extra sound and visual information.
Oh, wow.
It's like solving a puzzle in a room full of distractions.
I can see how that would be tough.
Yeah, and then there's the executive functioning side of things, too.
Right, the planning and organizing stuff.
Exactly. It's like having a really powerful engine.
Yeah, okay.
But then you can't find the right gear to harness all that power.
Interesting analogy.
Hopkins talks about the morning routine.
Okay, yeah.
He says it can feel like a Herculean effort just to get out the door.
Like a whole space mission.
Exactly.
So we've covered a lot about the sensory experiences and some of the challenges.
Right.
But I want to know about what Hopkins calls the ADHD advantage. What are some of those superpowers that come with this neurotype?
Well, for one thing, people with ADHD are often incredible pattern recognizers.
Hmm. How so?
Well, if you're always picking up on details that other people miss.
Yeah.
You're naturally going to start seeing those connections and patterns.
That makes sense.
That others might overlook.
So it's like having this built-in ability to decode complex information and solve problems in new ways.
And that can lead to some really valuable skills.
Mm.
You know, you might be amazing at data analysis.
Oh, wow.
Or like spotting trends in the stock market.
I see what you mean.
It's all about seeing things from a different perspective.
That's fascinating. Okay, so what else? What other strengths might surprise people?
Creativity is a big one.
Okay.
Hopkins describes the ADHD brain as this constant idea generator, almost like having multiple springs,
okay,
all feeding into the same river.
Interesting.
And each spring brings its own unique flow.
So that explains why so many people with ADHD thrive in creative fields, whether it's art, music, writing, even entrepreneurship.
It all makes sense when you look at it that way.
Right.
And then there's that ability to hyperfocus.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that.
When an ADHD brain locks onto something that really captures its interest, it can reach these amazing levels of concentration and productivity.
So it's not just about the challenges then. It's also about recognizing the potential and the strengths that come with this neurotype.
Absolutely. And one of the things that Hopkins really emphasizes is that those strengths are often intertwined with the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like that intense sensory experience can actually fuel creativity.
That's cool.
And being able to hyper-focus can lead to amazing achievements in very specific areas.
I'm starting to see how all the pieces fit together.
Good.
But I have a feeling there's still a lot to unpack when it comes to ADHD.
Oh, definitely.
What are some of the things that people might overlook or misunderstand?
One area is that interplay between sensory sensitivities and ADHD.
Okay.
You know, people often assume that sensory sensitivities are just an autism thing.
Right.
But they play a huge role in the ADHD experience, too.
So for someone with ADHD, even trying to focus in a noisy environment could be almost impossible.
It could be.
Not just because of distractibility, but because of that sensory overload.
Exactly. It's like trying to concentrate while 1,000 tiny bells are ringing in your ears.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
That's a lot to process.
What about routines?
Yeah, routines.
I've heard those can be super helpful for people with ADHD.
Absolutely. Hopkins talks about how routines can be a lifeline in a world that often feels chaotic and unpredictable.
I can see that.
Having that predictable structure can help with the executive functioning challenges.
Okay.
And it can also help reduce anxiety.
So it's not just about external structure then. Yeah. It's also about creating a sense of internal order.
Exactly.
Okay. So are you ready to tackle some myths about ADHD?
Let's do it.
There are so many misconceptions floating around out there.
There are.
Where should we start?
Well, one of the biggest ones is that ADHD is simply autism plus ADHD.
Right.
I know we touched on this earlier.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember, ADHD is its own distinct thing.
It's its own neurodevelopmental profile.
Exactly.
It's not about adding two conditions together.
Right.
It's about understanding how they interact.
To create a unique experience.
Another misconception I've heard.
Okay.
Is that people with ADHD can't succeed.
Oh, that's a harmful one.
It completely ignores all the incredible talents and potential.
Exactly.
Of people with ADHD.
Individuals with ADHD can excel in so many areas, especially those that value creativity, problem solving, and specialized knowledge.
So it's not about limitations.
No.
It's about finding the right environments
and
support systems to help their strengths flourish.
Exactly.
And then there's that myth that medication is the only answer for ADHD.
Oh, yeah.
I can see how people might jump to that conclusion.
It seems simple.
But it's such an oversimplification.
It really is.
While medication can be helpful for some,
it's
definitely not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Right.
Supporting ADHD requires a more holistic approach.
It does.
Including things like therapy, coaching, educational supports, even lifestyle modifications.
Absolutely.
And assistive technologies.
It's about finding what works for each individual.
It's about tailoring those interventions to their specific strengths and challenges.
Exactly. So it's not about a one-size-fits-all prescription.
Right.
It's about creating a personalized toolkit.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground already.
We have.
But I feel like we're just scratching the surface
so much more
of this fascinating world of ADHD.
There is.
What are some of the things that we should dive into next?
Well, one area that needs more attention is the double empathy problem.
A double empathy problem.
It makes us rethink how we view communication challenges.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
It's this idea that communication difficulties aren't just about one person lacking social skills.
Okay.
It's more about a mismatch in communication styles and a lack of shared understanding.
Interesting.
It's like trying to communicate with someone who speaks a different language.
Okay.
But you don't realize you're both using different dictionaries.
Wow, that's a really great analogy.
Thanks.
So it's not about fixing the neurodivergent person.
Right.
It's about creating a bridge of understanding between those different ways of communicating.
And Hopkins actually highlights some really interesting research in his books that supports this idea.
Okay.
There are studies showing that autistic individuals communicate really effectively with each other.
Mm.
But when they interact with neurotypical individuals, there's often a breakdown.
So it's not that autistic people are inherently bad at communication.
Right.
It's that they're using a different style.
Yes.
That might be misinterpreted or misunderstood by neurotypical people.
And this goes both ways.
Oh, how so?
Neurotypical individuals might struggle with the directness.
Okay.
Or literal interpretations that are common in autistic communication.
So how do we start to bridge this gap?
That's the big question.
What are some of the things that Hopkins suggests?
Well, he talks about the importance of clear communication,
okay,
active listening,
uh-huh,
and a willingness to adapt and adjust communication styles.
So being mindful and patient,
yeah,
and willing to meet each other halfway.
Exactly. And he suggests using visual aids,
okay,
written instructions,
uh-huh,
other tools that can help clarify meaning.
That makes sense.
And prevent those misunderstandings.
Sometimes a picture really is worth 1,000 words.
It really is.
And active listening.
Yes, active listening is crucial.
I think that's something we could all benefit from.
I agree.
Regardless of neurotype.
Right. It's such a fundamental skill for building strong relationships.
And fostering genuine connection.
Absolutely.
Okay, so speaking of relationships, Hopkins spends a lot of time in his books talking about the unique challenges,
yeah,
and rewards of relationships for people with ADHD.
It does.
This is something I'm really interested in.
What?
Because relationships are such a core part of the human experience.
They are.
But they can be extra challenging for people with ADHD.
It's true.
So how does he approach this?
Well, he starts by emphasizing self-awareness.
Okay.
Understanding your own ADHD traits, your strengths and challenges.
Yeah.
That's crucial for navigating relationships in a healthy way.
It makes sense.
If you're not aware of your own tendencies,
right,
and how they might impact your interactions,
yeah,
it's going to be a lot harder to communicate your needs.
And to set boundaries.
Exactly.
Okay, so what else?
Well, Hopkins also encourages individuals with ADHD,
okay,
to be open about their diagnosis with their loved ones,
hmm,
to explain how their brain works,
yeah,
and how that might affect their behavior in relationships.
I think open communication is so important.
It is.
In any relationship.
Right.
But especially when neurodiversity is involved.
It helps build that foundation of understanding.
Your acceptance.
Yes. And Hopkins stresses finding partners and friends who are accepting.
Of course.
And understanding of neurodiversity.
Right.
Who are willing to learn and adapt.
Yeah.
And who value the strengths that come with ADHD.
That sounds like a recipe for a really amazing relationship.
It does, doesn't it?
To have someone who not only accepts your neurodiversity,
yeah,
but actually celebrates it.
It's a beautiful thing.
And Hopkins makes it clear that those kinds of relationships do exist.
They do.
That there are people out there,
uh-huh,
who will appreciate all your unique qualities.
Even the ones that others might see as quirks or challenges.
You know, it's easy to get caught up in the challenges of ADHD.
It is.
But it's so important to remember, yeah, that there's beauty.
Yes.
Creativity.
And love.
That can come from these relationships.
Absolutely. And Hopkins highlights some great examples of this in his books.
He shares stories of people with ADHD.
Yeah.
Who have found love.
Yeah.
Built strong friendships.
Wow.
Created families.
That's really inspiring.
It is.
To hear those stories and know that connection is possible.
Even amidst the challenges.
Now, I know Hopkins doesn't sugarcoat things.
Right.
He acknowledges the realities of living with ADHD.
He does.
Those difficulties that people might face,
yeah,
like sensory overload in social situations,
mm-hmm,
the emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
Those communication breakdowns that can happen.
It can be tough.
When neurotypical and neurodivergent communication styles clash.
It can.
So he paints a realistic picture.
Yes.
But he also offers practical strategies for navigating all those challenges.
What kind of things?
Well, he talks about managing sensory overload.
Okay.
By creating sensory safe spaces.
Uh-huh.
Using noise-canceling headphones.
Right.
Communicating your sensory needs to others.
Those are all good tips.
And he offers ways to cope with feeling emotionally overwhelmed. Okay, how so?
Things like practicing mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Engaging in physical activity,
yeah,
seeking support from therapists,
okay,
or counselors.
Those are all great strategies.
And he always emphasizes open communication,
yeah,
active listening,
mm-hmm,
and a willingness to adapt and adjust communication styles.
So it's like he's providing a toolkit.
Exactly.
To help people with ADHD build strong and healthy relationships.
And to thrive even with the challenges.
That's awesome.
And he reminds us it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
To lean on loved ones for support.
Mm-hmm.
And to reach out to professionals when you need them.
That's so important.
It is.
It's okay to not have to figure it all out on your own.
We all need support.
Especially with something as complex as relationships.
Absolutely.
Okay, so next,
yeah.
We should talk about education.
Education is so crucial.
I'm really passionate about this topic because education has the power to empower or disempower neurodivergent individuals.
You're right. It really depends on how it's approached.
Unfortunately, the traditional education system often misses the mark.
It does.
When it comes to meeting the needs of learners with ADHD.
So how do we fix that?
How do we rethink our approach?
Yeah, what does Hopkins suggest?
Well, he starts by talking about early identification and intervention.
Makes sense.
Recognizing those signs of ADHD early on can make a huge difference in a child's educational journey.
Right. The earlier you provide those supports and accommodations, the better.
Okay, so what else?
Hopkins is a big proponent of individualized education plans, or IEPs, that are really tailored to the specific needs of each learner.
Those IEPs can be so valuable.
Absolutely.
To make sure that students with ADHD are getting the support they need
to succeed in the classroom.
And Hopkins actually gives a whole overview of the types of accommodations.
He does.
And supports that might be included in an IEP.
Things like extended time on tests.
Yeah.
Preferential seating.
Uh-huh.
Sensory breaks. Assistive technology.
Yeah.
And modified assignments.
So it's all about creating a learning environment that's flexible.
Yes.
Adaptable.
Right.
Recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to education.
Exactly. And Hopkins also challenges educators to adopt a neurodiversity-affirming approach to teaching.
Hmm. What does that look like in practice?
Well, it means moving away from that deficit-based model.
Okay.
That focuses on fixing what's perceived as wrong.
Yeah.
And instead embracing a strengths-based approach.
I like that.
That celebrates neurodiversity as something valuable.
It's recognizing that different brains learn in different ways.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing.
Not at all.
It's actually a really beautiful thing.
It is.
Okay, so what else can educators do?
Well, Hopkins encourages them to create flexible and adaptable learning environments.
Okay.
That cater to those different learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
And to provide multiple ways for students to show what they know.
So instead of forcing everyone into the same rigid structure,
right.
It's about providing options, letting students learn in the ways that work best for them.
It's about meeting them where they are.
And creating a classroom culture that's inclusive, respectful,
and supportive of all learners.
You know, when students feel safe and accepted for who they are,
absolutely,
they're so much more likely to thrive.
In every way.
Academically and socially.
And Hopkins doesn't limit this discussion of neurodiversity to just education and relationships.
Okay. Where else does he go?
He also talks about the workplace.
The workplace.
He recognizes that navigating the professional world can be especially tough for people with ADHD.
I can see that. What kind of guidance does he offer?
Well, he starts by acknowledging that the traditional workplace, with all his emphasis on conformity, structure, and social interaction, it often clashes with the needs and strengths
of the ADHD neurotype.
Exactly. A lot of those workplace norms are designed for neurotypical brains.
Mm.
And they don't always translate well to neurodivergent ways of working.
So how do we change that?
Well, Hopkins challenges us to rethink that whole traditional model.
Okay.
And to create environments that are more flexible.
Yeah.
Accommodating.
Uh-huh.
And that value diversity of thought.
So it's not just about making accommodations for individuals.
Right.
It's about creating a whole workplace culture that embraces neurodiversity.
As a strength.
As an asset.
Exactly. And Hopkins has tons of practical advice.
Oh, good.
For both individuals with ADHD.
Okay.
And employers who want to create these neurodiversity-friendly workplaces.
What kind of advice does he give to individuals with ADHD?
Well, one key thing is to choose a career that aligns with your ADHD strengths.
Makes sense.
Like those creative problem-solving skills, pattern recognition, and specialized knowledge.
So find a career path that plays to your strengths.
Exactly.
Rather than forcing yourself into a mold that doesn't fit.
And he encourages looking into fields like technology, design research, or entrepreneurship.
Love that.
Where those unique thinking styles are actually valued.
It's recognizing that neurodiversity is a source of innovation.
Yes.
And creativity.
Not a limitation.
Okay, so once you found a job, what then?
He encourages people with ADHD to be upfront with their employers about their needs and to advocate for accommodations.
So be your own self-advocate.
Exactly.
And communicate those needs clearly.
And confidently.
I like that.
And Hopkins has a whole list of potential accommodations.
Well, like what?
Things like flexible work hours,
okay,
noise-canceling headphones,
uh-huh,
written instructions,
yeah,
adjusted lighting,
mm,
even private workspaces.
Wow. It's amazing how many options there are.
It really is.
To create a supportive and inclusive work environment.
And Hopkins emphasizes working with your employer,
okay,
to create a plan,
uh-huh,
that addresses your specific challenges.
Right.
And supports your unique strengths.
It's not just about generic accommodations, then. It's about tailoring those supports. Yes.
To meet the needs of each individual.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what about managing stress in the workplace?
That can be a big one.
It can be for anyone.
Right.
But especially for people with ADHD.
They might be more sensitive to sensory overload,
yeah,
or social pressure,
yeah,
and those demands on their executive functioning.
Yeah.
So Hopkins offers a lot of strategies.
Oh, good. Like what?
Things like creating a calming workspace.
Okay.
Using breaks wisely.
Huh?
Practicing good sleep hygiene. Setting boundaries and using those problem solving skills,
right,
to address those workplace challenges.
Those are all great tips.
And they can apply to anyone, really.
I think so, too.
He also talks about finding mentors or colleagues who are supportive.
Yeah, having that network at work can be so important.
It can make a world of difference.
Especially when you're navigating those challenges of neurodiversity in a professional setting.
It really can.
So, you know, one of the things I appreciate about Hopkins' work
is that he doesn't just focus on that individual level.
Right.
He challenges us to zoom out and consider the bigger societal picture.
He does.
We can make all the accommodations we want for individuals.
Right.
But if the systems and structures of society are not friendly to neurodiversity,
yeah,
we're not really going to see progress.
It's about systemic change.
And Hopkins is calling for a fundamental shift.
He is.
In how we view neurological differences.
But what kind of shift is he talking about?
He wants us to move away from that medical model,
okay,
that sees neurodiversity as a problem to be fixed,
right,
and instead embrace a paradigm,
yeah,
that values and celebrates these differences.
It's about recognizing that neurodiversity is not a deficit.
Right.
It's a difference.
And that difference can be a strength.
Absolutely.
It's a source of creativity and innovation.
And Hopkins challenges us to create more inclusive education systems.
Yeah.
Systems that actually cater to different learning styles.
Huh?
And that provide the support that all students need to thrive.
So instead of trying to force every student into the same mold,
right,
we recognize that different brains learn in different ways.
And we provide different learning opportunities.
To meet those diverse needs.
Exactly.
What about the workplace?
Well, he says we need to rethink that traditional model.
Okay.
And create environments that are more flexible,
mm-hmm,
more accommodating,
yeah,
and that value, that diversity of thought.
I love that it's about seeing neurodiversity as an asset in the workplace,
yes,
not a liability.
And he calls for greater representation of neurodivergent individuals,
okay,
in leadership positions,
mm-hmm,
in the media,
right,
in all aspects of society.
I think that's so important.
It is.
Because when we see people who are different from us,
yeah,
in those positions of power,
right,
it helps to break down stereotypes.
And it creates more inclusive and equitable society.
What about within families and communities?
Hopkins emphasizes fostering understanding and acceptance of neurodiversity.
Oh, okay.
In those settings, too.
It's about creating a culture of belonging.
Yes.
Where everyone feels valued and respected.
No matter how their brain is wired.
And Hopkins reminds us that creating a neurodiversity-friendly world,
mm-hmm,
isn't just about making accommodations.
Right.
Or changing policies.
It's about changing our attitudes.
Yeah.
And our beliefs about difference.
It's recognizing that there's no one right way to think.
Exactly.
To learn,
uh-huh,
or to be.
It's embracing difference as a strength.
And a weakness.
And it's creating a world where everyone has the opportunity to reach their full potential.
No matter how their brain is wired.
I love that.
That's a beautiful vision.
It is.
And I think we can all work towards it.
But it's going to take time and effort.
It's not going to happen overnight.
And Hopkins offers a roadmap.
He does.
For creating this kind of world.
Okay.
A world where people with ADHD.
Yeah.
Can live authentically, thrive.
Mm-hmm. And contribute their unique gifts to society.
His work is a call to action.
It is.
A plea for understanding.
Uh-huh.
And a celebration of the human brain in all its diversity.
It's a reminder that we all have a part to play.
We do.
In creating a more just and equitable world. Expert.
It's about recognizing that everyone has a responsibility in making communication work.
Yeah, it's a two-way street.
So how can we apply this idea of double empathy?
Yeah, how can we use it to make communication better?
Well, I think the first step
okay.
is just being aware that this double empathy problem exists.
Okay. So recognizing that those communication struggles
right.
might not be about someone lacking social skills.
Yep.
It could be because people are communicating in different ways.
It's a mismatch.
So, for example, instead of getting frustrated when someone doesn't pick up on a social cue, we could try to be more direct with our communication.
Yes. Be explicit.
And on the other hand,
okay.
if someone with ADHD is being very blunt or direct, we can try to understand that that might just be their natural way of communicating.
Right.
And not take it personally.
It's about shifting that perspective.
Yeah. And realizing that different communication styles can actually work together.
They can complement each other.
So Hopkins gives some tips for bridging this communication gap.
He does. What does he say?
He suggests using things like visual aids.
Visual aids.
Written instructions.
Wow.
And other tools that can help make things clearer.
To prevent those misunderstandings.
Yeah, I've definitely found that visual aids can be super helpful.
Me too.
Even for things that aren't related to neurodiversity.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to see it.
To understand.
And Hopkins also talks about active listening.
Ah, active listening. That's so important.
It is. It's about really paying attention to what the other person is saying.
Yeah.
Asking clarifying questions.
Uh-huh.
Reflecting back what you've heard.
To make sure you're both on the same page.
Active listening is something we could all get better at.
Absolutely. It's a skill that builds strong relationships.
And creates those genuine connections.
Okay, so let's shift gears a bit.
Okay.
And talk about relationships.
Relationships.
Hopkins talks a lot about the unique challenges and rewards of relationships for people with ADHD.
He doesn't shy away from those challenges.
What are some of the things he brings up?
Well, he acknowledges the difficulties that people with ADHD might face with social interaction.
Yeah.
Communication,
mm-hmm.
emotional regulation,
okay.
and sensory overload.
It's a lot.
And all of those things can impact relationships.
So how does he suggest people approach these challenges?
He starts by emphasizing self-awareness.
Okay, so understanding your own ADHD traits.
Your strengths and challenges.
And then how those might affect your interactions with others.
Right, if you're not aware of your own tendencies, it's going to be hard to communicate your needs and set those healthy boundaries.
I see what you mean. Okay, so what else?
Hopkins also encourages individuals with ADHD to be open about their diagnosis.
Okay.
With their loved ones.
To explain how their brain works.
Yeah, and how that might influence their behavior and relationships.
That makes sense. Open communication is so important in any relationship.
It really is. It builds trust and understanding.
And Hopkins also stresses the importance of finding partners and friends
yeah.
who are accepting and understanding of neurodiversity.
It's about finding your people.
People who are willing to learn and adapt.
And who value the strengths that individuals with ADHD bring to those relationships.
That sounds like a pretty great relationship to me.
It does, doesn't it?
To find someone who not only accepts your neurodiversity, but celebrates it.
That's the dream.
And Hopkins makes it clear that these kinds of relationships are out there.
They are.
There are people who will appreciate your unique qualities.
Even those quirky ones?
The ones that other people might see as challenges.
Exactly.
It's so easy to get caught up in the challenges of ADHD.
It is.
But we have to remember
yeah.
that there's so much beauty and creativity and love.
That can come from these relationships.
And Hopkins has some great examples in his books.
He does. What kind of stories does he tell?
Stories of people with ADHD who have found love.
Mm-hmm.
Built strong friendships,
yep.
created families.
It's inspiring to hear those stories.
It reminds us that connection is possible.
Even with the challenges.
And I know Hopkins doesn't sugarcoat things.
Right. He doesn't pretend that everything's easy.
He acknowledges those real difficulties.
Yeah.
Like sensory overload in social situations.
Mm-hmm.
The emotional roller coaster.
Right.
Those communication breakdowns.
That can be tough.
When neurotypical and neurodivergent communication styles collide.
But he offers strategies for handling those challenges.
Like what kind of things?
He talks about managing sensory overload.
Okay.
Creating sensory safe spaces.
Huh?
Using noise-canceling headphones. And communicating your sensory needs to others.
Good advice.
He also gives strategies for dealing with emotional overwhelm.
Oh, that's so important.
Things like mindfulness, physical activity.
Yeah.
Even seeking support from therapists or counselors.
And of course, he emphasizes open communication.
Yes, always.
Active listening and being willing to adapt your communication style.
It's about meeting each other halfway.
So he's essentially giving people a toolkit.
Exactly.
For building strong and healthy relationships.
Even with those unique challenges that come with ADHD.
And he reminds us that It's okay to ask for help.
Yes.
It's okay to lean on your loved ones for support.
And to reach out to professionals when you need them.
You don't have to go it alone.
We all need help sometimes.
Especially when we're dealing with something as complex as relationships.
Okay, so shifting gears again.
Yeah, where to next?
Let's talk about education.
Education.
It plays such a crucial role in the lives of people with ADHD.
Absolutely. I think education can be a powerful tool for empowerment.
It can.
But it can also be a source of disempowerment.
Depending on how it's done.
And unfortunately, the traditional education system often falls short.
It doesn't always meet the needs of neurodivergent learners.
So how do we change that?
What does Hopkins suggest?
He starts by emphasizing early identification and intervention.
Okay.
Recognizing those signs of ADHD early on can make a huge difference in a child's educational path.
The sooner you get those supports in place, the better.
And he's a big advocate for individualized education plans, or IEPs.
IEPs.
Tailored to each student's unique needs.
Those can be so valuable.
They can help ensure that students with ADHD get the specific support they need.
To succeed in the classroom.
And Hopkins goes through all sorts of accommodations and supports.
He does give us some examples.
Things like extended time on tests.
Okay.
Preferential seating, sensory breaks, assistive technology,
and modified assignments.
It's about flexibility and recognizing that one size doesn't fit all in education.
It's about finding what works for each student.
Hopkins also challenges educators to take a neurodiversity-affirming approach.
That's a big one.
What does that look like?
It means moving away from that deficit-based model that focuses on fixing what's wrong and instead embracing a strengths-based approach. That celebrates neurodiversity.
It's recognizing that different brains learn in different ways.
Exactly. And that's a good thing.
It's a beautiful thing.
So how can educators put that into practice?
Well, Hopkins suggests creating flexible and adaptable learning environments that cater to those different learning styles.
Okay.
And provide multiple ways for students to demonstrate their knowledge.
So instead of forcing everyone into the same rigid structure.
Yeah.
You provide options and let students learn in the ways that work best for them.
And, of course, creating a classroom culture that's inclusive and respectful.
And supportive of all learners.
When students feel safe and accepted, they're so much more likely to thrive.
Absolutely.
Both academically and socially.
Okay, so Hopkins doesn't stop there.
Oh, there's more.
He also delves into the workplace.
The workplace, that's a whole other world.
It is, and it can be especially tough for individuals with ADHD.
What does he say about that?
Well, he acknowledges that the traditional workplace, with its emphasis on conformity, structure, and social interaction, it often clashes with the needs and strengths of people with ADHD.
Because a lot of those workplace norms are designed for neurotypical brains.
Exactly.
So how do we change that?
Hopkins challenges us to rethink the whole traditional model.
Okay.
To create environments that are more flexible.
Yeah.
Accommodating that value diversity of thought.
I like that.
It's not just about making accommodations for individuals.
It's about creating a whole workplace culture that embraces neurodiversity.
As a strength.
As an asset.
Exactly. And Hopkins has tons of practical advice.
For both individuals with ADHD.
And for employers.
Who want to create these neurodiversity-friendly workplaces.
Exactly.
What does he suggest for individuals with ADHD?
Well, one key thing is to choose a career that aligns with your strengths.
Okay, so play to your strengths.
All right, and Hopkins suggests looking at fields like technology, design research, or entrepreneurship.
Where those unique thinking styles are actually valued.
Absolutely. It's recognizing that neurodiversity can drive innovation and creativity.
Okay, so once you've found a job, what then?
He encourages people with ADHD to be upfront with their employers about their needs.
Okay, so be your own advocate.
Exactly, and communicate those needs clearly and confidently.
I like that. And Hopkins has a whole list of potential accommodations.
He does, like, what kind of things?
Things like flexible work hours.
Okay.
Noise-canceling headphones, written instructions.
Right.
Adjusted lighting.
And even private workspaces.
It's amazing how many options there are to create a supportive environment.
And he talks about working with your employer to create a plan.
That addresses your specific challenges and supports your unique strengths.
So it's about finding what works for you.
Not just relying on generic accommodation.
Yeah.
What about managing stress in the workplace?
That could be a big one for anyone.
It can, but especially for people with ADHD.
Because they might be more sensitive to sensory overload or social pressure.
Yeah.
And they might struggle with executive functioning.
So what does Hopkins suggest?
He gives a lot of strategies.
Give us a few.
Things like creating a calming workspace.
Okay.
using breaks strategically, practicing good sleep hygiene, setting boundaries, and using those problem-solving skills to deal with workplace challenges.
Those are all great tips.
And they can apply to anyone, really.
Absolutely. And Hopkins also talks about finding supportive mentors or colleagues.
That network can be so important.
It can make a world of difference.
Especially when you're navigating neurodiversity in a professional setting.
You know what I appreciate about Hopkins' work?
Yeah.
Is that he doesn't just focus on the individual.
Right.
He challenges us to look at the bigger picture.
The societal context.
We can make accommodations for individuals. Mm. But if the systems and structures of society aren't neurodiversity friendly,
we're not going to see real change.
So Hopkins is calling for a fundamental shift.
He is.
In how we view neurological differences.
What kind of shift?
He wants us to move away from that medical model.
Okay.
That sees neurodiversity as a problem to be fixed. And embrace a paradigm that values and celebrates those differences.
That's a big shift.
But it's so important.
It is. It's recognizing that neurodiversity is not a deficit.
Right. It's a difference.
And that difference can be a strength.
A source of creativity and innovation.
And Hopkins wants us to create inclusive education systems that cater to different learning styles.
Yeah.
And provide the support that all students need.
So instead of trying to make every student fit the same mold, we recognize that different brains learn in different ways.
And we provide different learning opportunities.
To meet those diverse needs.
Exactly. What about the workplace?
He wants to rethink the traditional model there, too.
Create environments that are flexible and accommodating.
And that value diversity of thought.
He wants to see more neurodivergent individuals in leadership positions.
Yeah.
In the media. Mm. In all areas of society.
Because when we see people who are different from us in positions of power, it breaks down stereotypes.
And it creates a more inclusive and equitable society.
And what about families and communities?
Hopkins talks about the importance of fostering understanding and acceptance in those settings, too.
It's about creating that sense of belonging.
Yeah, where everyone feels valued and respected.
No matter how their brain works.
And Hopkins reminds us that creating a neurodiversity-friendly world isn't just about making accommodations.
We're changing policies.
It's about changing our attitudes and beliefs.
It's about embracing difference as a strength.
Not a weakness.
And creating a world where everyone has the opportunity to reach their full potential.
Regardless of how their brain is wired.
That's a beautiful vision.
It is.
Something we can all work towards.
But it's going to take time and effort.
It won't happen overnight.
But Hopkins offers us a roadmap.
He does.
For creating this kind of world.
A world where individuals with ADHD can truly thrive.
A world where they can live authentically and contribute their unique gifts to society.
His work is so inspiring.
It is.
It's a call to action.
A plea for understanding.
And a celebration of the beauty and complexity of the human brain.
In all its diversity.
It reminds us that we all have a role to play.
In creating a more just and equitable world.
For everyone.
You know, it's amazing when you think about it.
What's that?
All the ways society could benefit from embracing neurodiversity.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Hopkins actually calls this the ADHD advantage.
The ADHD advantage. I like that.
Yeah, it's this idea that the way your brain works could actually be a real asset, especially in certain fields.
Okay, like what kind of fields?
We're starting to see companies realize this.
Yeah.
And they're actively recruiting neurodivergent employees because they're recognizing those skills.
Okay.
Like pattern recognition, creative problem solving, and that amazing ability to hyper-focus.
Yeah, on those tasks that really capture their interest.
Exactly.
It makes you think about our education system, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And how we could be doing more to support neurodiversity.
Hopkins talks a lot about that.
Yeah, I remember he talked about the need for more individualized approaches.
Yes, instead of trying to fit everyone into the same box.
Right.
We need to recognize that different brains learn in different ways.
So true.
It's like that saying about teaching a fish to climb a tree.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
It's not about who's better or worse.
Right.
It's just recognizing that we all have our own strengths and learning styles.
Okay, so how do we bridge that gap then?
Yeah, how do we support both neurotypical and neurodivergent learners?
Well, Hopkins talks about some interesting tools and strategies.
He does give us some examples.
Like things like communication preference cards.
Oh, yeah. Those are great.
So you can clearly express how you best receive information.
Right. And social stories.
I've heard of those.
Yeah. Those can help break down complex social situations into smaller steps.
Almost like little scripts.
Yeah.
That can help you navigate those tricky social situations.
Like job interviews.
Yeah. Or just unfamiliar social settings.
And Hopkins also talks about sensory regulation tools.
Okay.
Things like noise-canceling headphones or fidget toys.
Right.
Those can be so helpful for managing sensory input.
And staying focused.
Okay.
You know, I think even neurotypical people could benefit from some of these tools.
Oh, totally.
I mean, we've all felt overwhelmed in a noisy environment.
Yeah, or struggled to concentrate with distractions.
It's true.
I think it highlights this idea
yeah.
that creating a neurodiversity-friendly world benefits everyone.
I like that it's like designing a building with ramps instead of stairs.
Ooh, good analogy.
It makes it more accessible for people who use wheelchairs.
Right.
But it also helps parents with strollers.
Delivery people.
Yeah, anyone who struggles with stairs.
It's a win-win.
Okay, so where do we go from here?
Yeah, what are some concrete steps we can take?
To create a world that truly embraces neurodiversity.
Hopkins offers a really comprehensive roadmap in his books.
Okay.
He emphasizes the importance of early identification and support.
For neurodivergent children.
Yes, recognizing those signs early on and providing the right interventions.
It's sad to think how many brilliant minds might have been overlooked.
It is.
Or mislabeled in the past.
Just because we didn't understand neurodiversity.
Okay. So what else?
He talks a lot about the importance of self-advocacy.
Self-advocacy.
Yeah, empowering neurodivergent individuals to understand their own needs.
Okay.
To communicate those needs effectively.
Right.
And advocate for the accommodations and supports that they need to thrive.
I love that it's about taking ownership.
Yes.
And not being afraid to ask for what you need.
Exactly. And he also talks about creating communities and social spaces
that
are truly welcoming and affirming of neurodiversity.
Safe spaces to be yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
To connect with others who understand your experience.
And to express your unique perspectives.
It's about creating a culture of belonging.
Where everyone feels valued and respected.
No matter how their brain is wired.
Exactly. And I think one of the most important takeaways
yeah.
is that creating a neurodiversity-friendly world, it's not just about making accommodations or changing policies.
Yeah.
It's about a fundamental shift in our attitudes and beliefs.
So moving away from seeing neurodiversity as a problem to fix
right.
and embracing it as part of the human experience.
It's about recognizing that there's no one right way to think.
To learn or to be.
It's about embracing those differences.
And seeing them as strengths, not weaknesses.
And creating a world where everyone has the opportunity to reach their full potential.
Regardless of how their brain is wired.
That's what it's all about.
It really is. It's about celebrating all those different minds.
Yes.
And recognizing the unique contributions that each person brings. Well, this deep dive into ADHD has been so insightful.
It has.
And inspiring.
I agree.
I hope our listeners are walking away
yeah.
with a new appreciation for the power of neurodiversity.
And for the importance of creating a world that embraces all kinds of minds.
That's what we're all about here.
Absolutely.
If there's one thing I want you to remember,
yeah.
it's that ADHD isn't a limitation.
Right.
It's a different way of experiencing the world.
And that difference can be a source of amazing strengths.
Creativity and innovation.
Don't forget that.
So keep those amazing brains of yours curious.
Keep asking questions.
Keep challenging those assumptions.
And keep exploring this fascinating world of neurodiversity.
Until next time.
Dive deep, everyone.
Dive deep. It's